Mr. Painting, reel 9. Mr. Painting, you're describing the storehouse in the camp at Tingliff?
Tingliff, yes.
Yes.
Well, this was a... We were hadn't much food, and I saw this house there, and there was a little window, so we knew that that was where the Germans had got food. So I, with another lad, he was watch out, and I got up there and got through this window and found some split peas there, dried peas. I filled my pockets and I filled my handkerchief with it and got out there. And this lad and I, we shared it, and we lived on dried peas for 3 weeks. They were a little bit windy, but still there was something to fill the nick, you see. So I have to laugh about it. I don't know what would happen to me if the Germans had caught me, I'm sure. And of course, the peas that I had there would be short rationed later on. Yes, the first 3 weeks we were practically on water. There were 370 English prisoners, and as a result of the cold weather and the shortage of food, 14 of them died. And we went on the funeral parties. They were buried in the village, which is about 3 miles away from camp. And one lad who died, I'd been lucky. I'd been, my people had sent me out some clothes and overcoat and under things. Well, one of the lads, Rifleman Wilding, he was one of my own particular platoon. And he hadn't got anything, and I'd given him a singlet, to wear a singlet. Well, he and another fella had been over to the cookhouse to get the bucket of food for the, you know, water and bread for the 25 men. And the exertion was too much for him. It was, he went and lay down in the straw and died. And I went on his funeral at the village there. He was buried, of course he was buried with what you died in, you see. He was buried with my singlet on. Put old Wilding, he was a reservist. And another fella, he had something the matter with him, I don't know what it was now, and he was going down from the nearest hospital place was Flensburg. And this lad had got to go down to Flensburg for some treatment. And it was cold, and I had my overcoat, civvy overcoat sent from England, and I let him have that to go down there. He went to hospital. I never saw the overcoat again. But still, I suppose his need was greater than mine, and the weather was beginning to get better, so I didn't mind. But there it was, one singlet and one overcoat. However, the weather got much better, and we didn't get organised work. You'd get in poverties and have to go out and cut down heather and that kind of thing, you see, and make a bit of clearing of the ground and get organised in parties like that. But it wasn't very strenuous. You never didn't do much, and then come back because the weather was getting better and we're getting more close into us. You see, you could rub your clothes out and we were clean. We'd got away with the minor scourges of war. They'd finished with us. And do a little bit of washing. And we never did anything on Saturdays and Sundays. Saturdays and Sundays were spent in washing or playing leapfrog, rounders or anything, you know, to keep your spirits up. And we were also joined with French and Russians. The French were in another side of the tent, and Russians, they were in another block. Well, we also formed, the French also formed a band. We sergeants didn't go to do much work. And we formed a band. The instruments were weird. Got a mouth organ. The drum was a round wooden tub kind of thing, and a little bit of metal was put underneath the lid, and a proper drummer of the York and Lancasters, he beat that. He was a drummer. We had a triangle. The fellow of the Lyle North Lancs was on the triangle, beat the triangle. A sergeant of the South Staffords, the bass violin was a broom drawn along the wooden floor at varying strengths and speed, you see, to make a different note like that. I got a mouth organ, and then we had brown paper that our parcels came in, was rolled up, and holes were cut in it like a flute, and a little bit of fine tissue paper from the parcels was put over there, and that was one of the, that was the instrument I played. We had our bandmaster was a sergeant of the Lincolns named Dick Mann, and of course he didn't know anything about music, but we used to beat the time kind of thing, and we made him quite posh. We some of the lids that came off our food parcels, our packets, we cut off, and the off his shoes put on the lace there, and we made him four medals there for tins he was properly dressed. I'm talking about parcels. No parcel that we received was received intact. Everything was opened, you know, cut, any food or anything, or tins, and everything was open, so there was no messages or anything came into camp. But something did get into camp. We got a story of the Wild and Woolly West came in. There was the ne'er-do-well son who'd been sent off to Canada when there was the Red Indians there early in the days, the girl he'd left behind, and the irate father, and the family lawyer. I took the part of the family lawyer, Robin Blind. That was his name. Well, this Wild and Woolly West story came there, and we did a play out of it. The Russians had been sent away in this time, and we put the play on in the spare barrack room, you see, and the Germans came there. Well, for accommodation, you had in the hut, there was low side, and then in the middle, there was a tier which had three, you'd have that height, about 6 foot, so as you could sit down, and just your head was clear as foot space. Then above that, there was another platform, same height, and above that, another platform, you see. Well, the Germans had taken the best seat up there, you see, on there. Well, halfway through the blessed play, which we did it, we were even so keen that we sacrificed some of our cafiolet to colour the Indians red. The bodies were brown, of course, summer was getting there, and there were red Indians with cafiolet. And halfway through this blessed play, the staging collapsed on which these Germans were sitting. They couldn't stand the weight of them. So they were down there mixing the timber and everything else like that, and I'm afraid that was the end of the play. But it gave us much more satisfaction seeing them through the timber than in what the play was anyway. But we did our best to entertain the troops in that way, and we still had these little concerts, you know, with the music, you see, with the different things that we play, and the entrance fee to come and listen to us was a cigarette, a pinch of sugar, a pinch of tea, you know, anything to for entrance fee, and then we'd dish it out afterwards amongst those who hadn't got anything. Well, we always, if a man didn't get a parcel, he was always coming, you know, mucking with what you had, kind of, because you had little schools, you see. Mm-hmm. And, of course, some people weren't lucky as others, you see. And we had little schools where we shared our parcels with them. And We had the French. They ran a man, but our opposition was too strong for them. They had to retire. Oh yes, we only banned as we called it afterwards.
Were there any card games, or did people make cards or games of chess or Ludo boards or anything?
No, but I will say, when we were at Gustrow, that reminds me, when we were at Gustrow, one of our riflemen, he was a real card sharper, and I don't know where these cards from, but he made a lot of money out of people there with his card sharping. Oh, he was and he was, well, glad he'd buy things off the Russians, you know, he had money there which he could he was quite rich, but I never saw him at Augusto, but that reminded me, we knew when he mentioned that. Used to the fellow died. I mentioned about the lad who died with my head on.
Yes. When did you start thinking about escaping?
Right from the very beginning. When I put my rifle down, it broke my heart. And when we were at Gustrow, we could buy a book, an exercise book. And the back of this exercise book had got a map of the district, and it showed Rostock on it. Rostock on the Baltic, you see. And that wasn't too far from our camp, but we were in too bad a condition, and the weather was too bad. And as I would have made a go then, although it would have been difficult, because from Rostock, which is a port, you've got to get across over to Sweden, Norway and Sweden, you see, across the Baltic. But it would have been worth a shot. But the weather was too bad, and we got moved to Tingliff, you see, when they're still in the snow and ice. So then we didn't know where we were when we got to Tingliff. We knew that we was north of the Kiel, and that we were in the region of Denmark, but we didn't know how far. That was on the eastern side, you see. Tingliff was on the eastern side, on the Baltic side of Jutland or Schleswig. Then we had to get into a camp before you got the lie of the country, you see. Well, we didn't do a lot of work, but we kept ourselves in order, and we had the parcels come, and games had come, and we used to have boxing gloves and that kind of thing, and knock spots off each other. I know I was one of the fellows who were taken prison with me, a rifleman Walters. He was the welterweight champion of the Wellington Lions, and he was just my build. So we was having a little bit of a friendly go kind of business, as we do. And I thought I was going to hit him. But I'm afraid he hit me. I woke up after they'd thrown some water over me, and they said, go and have some more. I said, no, I'll retire on my levels. But you did that kind of thing, you know. I tell you, do anything to pass the boredom. And when we were at Tingliff, the weather got nice. We used to walk round inside the perimeter of the camp, round and round and round, to keep our feet in order, a number of us, and keep our legs going, so that when there was an opportunity of getting away, our legs would be all right to carry us. And from Tingliff, a camp in Tingliff, was where I'd kept the Orlick's malted milk, Oxo cubes, tobacco and chocolate and that kind of thing, you see, which was food in concentrated form, you see, for when I could get away. And that was the back of my mind all the time, fancied. But, it was summer, and the nights were getting too short. The hours of daylight were too long, you see. I mean, you had no chance of travelling at night. And if you had to lay up in the daytime, it was a long, long time, you see. So that moved. Well, by the time we got there, we didn't do much there, except we played rounders, leapfrog, or any game that didn't require any kit, you see. And I told her about the band that we formed, and how we cut out the French opposition, because our band was too good for them. And I said about the parcels being opened and that kind of thing, and everything cut open, so as you see, they got no what you might call contraband in letters or anything. But we got a Wild and Woolly West, for which we decided, and we made a concert party and did the play. And the Germans come and watch it, and they got they fell down. Well, we stayed in that camp until about July, and then we English prisoners, we were moved from there south of the Kiel Canal to a place called Kaltenkirchen, and that was a very sad move. We couldn't get to Denmark. We got the Kiel in between us. So, and Kaltenkirchen was a small camp, similar to Tingley, and we were the first prisoners of war to arrive there. They got Russians and French, Belgian, and the commandant, the first day when we got there, he paraded us and told us that he hated the English. If it wasn't for the English, the war would have been over, and that he would break our hearts. Well, we thought we'd struck a good place. Well, the next day we had to go out. We were marshalled in groups of 25, as I already mentioned. You see one. That was the system generally. We had to go to work. It rained in torrents.